Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos is Memches, where I'm Mem Zayin Amid Beis, and we made the big term yesterday. Here in the Masechta Ksuvos, we're talking now about the obligations that a husband has to his wife, not only obligations, but also benefits as well. So there are zechuyos, there are benefits that the husband's going to be receiving, and there are also chovos. Chov is not a good word. Chov sounds more like a liability. It's not a liability, but rather it's an obligation, a financial obligation that the husband has towards his wife when he marries her. And so these financial obligations are now being spelled out. They are being articulated here in the fourth parak of the Masechta. And we already made the comment yesterday that we are a little bit less than halfway through the Masechta, and now we're talking out the obligations. In the very beginning of the Masechta, if you remember, on Daf Beis, right, day number one. So we made an allusion to this. In other words, we talked about what happens when they get married. And they went through the first stage of marriage, Averisin, and now they were supposed to get married, the second stage of Nisuin, and they didn't. And then the question becomes, at what point in time is he now on the hook for all the financial obligations, right? Where they got to the Zman, but for reasons that were circumstances beyond his control, beyond her control, and they didn't go through the second stage of marriage, and now is he obligated to for all those financial obligations? So the Gemara discussed that all the way back on Daf Beis and Daf Gimel. And now, right, after just a short 47 days later, so what the Gemara now goes through is what are those actual financial obligations are. So again, there are going to be financial obligations and there are going to be benefits as well from the husband's standpoint. And so what we learned yesterday is that what the Chachamim set up is a reciprocal system, a quid pro quo. He's got benefits and he's got obligations that correspond to those benefits. As I mentioned yesterday, in yesterday's daf, so there's a really easy way to remember it as the letters kind of line up. So mizonos tachas masa yadeha. So he has a supporter. Supporter over here means food. So mizonos, so he has a supporter. So that is a financial obligation that he has once he enters into the second stage of marriage. And then masa yadeha, her earnings. So when she goes to work and she earns money, so any and all of her earnings are going to go to her husband. So he's got a supporter. The earnings are going to go back to him. Later in the Masechta, we're going to be talking about whether or not she could forfeit her support and keep her earnings. That's something that we're going to be discussing later in the Masechta. Anyway, that's one exchange. And another exchange that we learned yesterday is the, and by the way, those were the mems. That's mizonos and maaseh yadeha. And then there were the pays, pirkuna and peiros. So Pirkuna, she gets a get out of jail free card. Okay, what's it called? If you like the Monopoly reference, great, and if not, so I apologize. But so she gets a get out of jail free. In other words, if she's held captive, so he has now the financial obligation to go ahead and ransom her. That's Pirkuna, and what does he get in exchange for that as a benefit? So he gets payros, he gets the dividends. So if she comes into the marriage with any kind of properties, the properties remain hers. They're her properties. However, he does, in fact, collect the dividends on those properties. And so those are the pays. That's pirkuna, and that corresponds to payros. Okay, and then also on top of that, there's also ksuva and kvura. Okay, so here you don't have a letter match. Okay, 2 out of 3 is not bad in terms of mnemonics. But that means to say that when she comes into the marriage, she'll be coming in with a dowry, and that will be the... We're going to call that ksuva. Ksuva obviously is a generic term that describes the entire contractual obligation between him and her. But in this context, when we talked about it yesterday, when we said ksuva, we're talking about the nedunya. In other words, what his father-in-law is going to be doing is he's going to kickstart the marriage. He's going to be giving a whole bunch of assets into the marriage, movables usually. And so when she comes into the marriage through nisuin, so he gets all that. And then his financial obligation is that in the event that she predeceases him, so he has an obligation now that he has to bury her. The expenses of burial are placed on him, and now he's got to bury her, meaning he's got to lay out the money in order to bury her. And so that's the third exchange that we learned in the Gemara yesterday. So what did we learn in yesterday's daf? So yesterday we made the big term in terms of learning about the financial obligations the husband has to his wife, the financial benefits that the husband receives, and we learned yesterday about the reciprocal nature of these obligation benefits, right? The exchanges that the Chachamim laid out. That takes us to where we are right now. So we are on Mem Zayin Amid Beis and Amar Rava. Amar Rava is 5 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Let's continue. Amar Rava, Haitana Savra Mizonos Midaraisa. So here I'm going to show you a brisa says Rava, that Mizonos are min ha-Torah. Meaning, what Rav sounds like he's saying is that previously in yesterday's daf, when we learned about mizonos, so that is a rabbinic institution. In other words, marriage min ha-Torah does not require the husband to support his wife, but the rabbi is instructed to do so. And what Rava is demonstrating is that, I'm going to show you, psukim in the Torah that tell us that this is a biblical obligation, it's not just a rabbinic institution. Okay, that is one way to present the Gemara. It's not the only way to present the Gemara. It could be that Rava, that previously there was agreement to that, and previously we were just talking about what exactly the exchanges that were set up. Okay, here's what we could say definitively, and that is that according to Rava, this is a din Torah, din d'oraisa, that the husband has to support his wife. D'tanya, the Braisa says the following, she'eira. So over here, we are making reference to the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. So in which a man takes his daughter and and sells her for the purposes of marriage. And anyway, imacheres ikachlo, if somebody else takes her, so she'eira uksusa v'onaso lo yigra. So she's not going to be deprived of three things. Those three things are she'eira, ksusa, and onasa. All three of those things needs definition, but what's clear is that the Torah requires that the husband provide these three things, these three items to his wife. So good. So now, that's the easy part. Here's the hard part. What are they? What are they making a reference to? So here the Braisa is coming to define. So she'ira ela mizonos, so the she'ira is a reference to mizonos. Okay. V'cheinu omer. V'asher achlu she'ira mi. Okay, so the what this Braisa is going to do is that's going to find parallel structure. We're going to see other psukim that use the same verb, the same sharesh. And so basically by looking at other places in Tanakh, so the Braisa is going to help us identify and define what these items are. Good, so we have a share in reference to support, right? And again, support over here means food. So ksusa kemashmo, as far as ksusa, so that's her coverings, otherwise known as clothing. And onas zuona amur batar v'chino amrim tanas benosai. And as far as onas concerned, so that is the intimacy between husband and wife. That's an obligation that the husband has towards his wife, is that he has to be intimate with her. Later in this masechta, we're going to be talking about what that obligation translates to in terms of frequency. That's coming up later in the Masechta. So anyway, so those are the three items as defined by the Tanakhama of this Braisa. As far as onus concerned, as a reference to intimacy, so the Gemara quotes the pasuk by Lavan and Yaakov. So Lavan says to Yaakov, after a definitely tumultuous relationship between the two, right? Lavan is Yaakov's father-in-law two times over, right? He married two of his daughters, and according to the Medrash, he married four of his daughters. I learned this recently. According to the Midrashim, Bila and Zilpah were also daughters of Lavan. But that's a Midrash. But certainly Rachel and Leah are. So Lavan is his father-in-law two times over. And finally, when they made some sort of peace, and they made some sort of peace treaty by Galeid, so Lavan turns to his son-in-law and says, look, what you're not going to do is that Losa Imtan Esbenosai, you're not going to afflict my daughters. And as Rashi over there understands, that what it means is that you can't marry anymore. In other words, you have my two daughters, and on top of that, Bila and Zilpah, as well as wives, however you want to describe their marriages. But in other words, but their children also are the shiftei ka. Anyway, so you have my two daughters, and that's it. In other words, and you cannot marry any more daughters. So, but it's a. And the way Rashi and Chumash also brings this down as well, it means to say that what if you do so that you're going to be depriving my daughter your time and intimacy. Okay, so that is the definitions of these three terms as understood by the Tanakhama. Rebbe Lazar Omer Sherezuona. So Rebbe Lazar is going to disagree in terms of what the definitions are. Now it's going to come out that on a number of points he agrees Lamaisa. But he's going to disagree in terms of definition. She'ira is a reference to Ona v'cheinu omer ish isha kol she'er b'saro lo sukur v'legalos erva. Okay, so as far as she'ira is concerned, so he simply opens up to the psukim menachrei mos regarding arayos, and the word she'er is used over there certainly in the context of intimacy. That's clear. So she'er, in as opposed to the Tanakhama, where she'er is a reference to support, so according to Rabbi Lazar, she'er is a reference to Ona. It's a reference to intimacy. And And as far as ksusa is concerned, so that is clothing. And onasa is elam mazonas. And the onasa is a reference to mazonas. V'chein omer v'yancha v'yarivecha. Last week's parsha. Parsha Sekev. So the, so good. So we have psukim giving us different definitions. Okay, comes out, by the way, that ultimately they agree in terms of what the three obligations are in the Torah. It's just now a question of which word is referring to what. Okay, is there going to be differences, practical differences between their positions? I don't know.
Probably. It means in terms of chashivas, which one is first?
Maybe. I hear. Okay, I don't know. I'd be guessing. I don't know. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amer, we are now on the top of Memches Amud Aleph. And according to Shitas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Sheira Ksusa. So, Lefum Sheira Tain Ksusa. So the Sheira Ksusa are actually a reference to one point, one definitional point. And that is that based on her Sheir, that's the kind of clothing you're going to give. Now, that needs a little bit more work. What is that making reference to? Shelo yitain the, so immediately Rav Elazar ben Yaakov goes on to explain. Shelo yitain la lo shal yalada lezakena velo shal zakena la yalada. You must dress her age appropriate, meaning you must give her the money in order so that she can buy the clothing that is most age appropriate for her. Okay, take a look at Rashi over here on our Gemara. Rashi explains that the dress of a younger woman is not the same dress as an older woman. We're not just talking in terms of style. We're talking in terms of thickness and the amount of money that would need to be spent. Okay, whatever. See Rashi inside, right? I try to figure out Rashi in terms of, you know, which clothing is more expensive. It doesn't matter. In other words, buy her age appropriate clothing. Okay, that's number one. And ksusava onasa and. Now, as far as ksusa va'onasa, lefum onasa, tain ksusa. And the ksusa onasa is also referring to the clothing, and that is that you also not only have to give her age-appropriate clothing, but you have to give her seasonal-appropriate clothing. And that is, shelo yitain chadash mimos hachama v'lo shchakim b'yimos hagshamim. Okay, so that means to say that in the cold winter months, you have to give her clothing that are fitting for the cold winter months. And for the hot summer months, you have to give her clothing appropriate for that season as well. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so the really, as far as the Torah is concerned, it really is kisusa, that you must be giving her clothing, and the sheira and the onasa is talking about appropriate clothing, age-appropriate clothing, and seasonal-appropriate clothing. Okay. Tani Rav Yosef, we're not done yet. So far we've seen now a brisa that gave us not one, but not two, but three different interpretations of sheira, kisusa, and onasa. And here we're going to have now a fourth brisa, or a fourth interpretation. Tini Rav Yosef Sheira Zukir of Basar. Shalo yinhag ba minag parsim shemasham shematasem bilvushayim. So according to Rav Yosef, Sheira means kir of Basar, meaning that when husband and wife are intimate with each other, they have to be intimate with each other without clothing. Not like the Persians, says the Gemara, in which so what the Persians do is that they, when they're intimate with one another, they do so with clothing on. Not like the Persians. Misayele Ravuna Dam Ravuna Omer Yefshi Ella Anibe Bigdi Vihibe Bigdal Yosef and Isen Ksuvasa. So if let's say he's insistent that I'll be intimate with my wife but only with clothing on, so for such an individual we'll say that's not appropriate, that's not marital appropriate, and what you're gonna be doing is you're gonna be divorcing your wife and she will not be forfeiting her ksuva, meaning that is your fault. In other words, that's considered a failure on his part. And so therefore she will not be forfeiting her ksuva. That will be divorced with her entitled to her ksuva. Okay. Adkan, that takes us now to the end of the various understandings of Sheira Ksusa Va'onasa. So really interesting, in which the Gemara now has pointed to, there are those who are of the opinion that, the support that the husband has to support his wife and feed her, is a, not a din d'rabban, but rather a din d'araisa. But it's certainly interesting because we have now just covered four different interpretations, and according to some of them, the Torah is not making reference to food. It's not making reference to support. Meaning true, according to the Tanna Kamma, and according to Rabbi Elazar, right? Rabbi Elazar was Shita number two? Yeah. So according to the Tanna Kamma and according to Rabbi Elazar, so there, support is actually referenced to in the Torah. But according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it seems not. In other words, the Torah's focus is only on the clothing. And according to the Brice of Rabbi Yosef, I don't know. Meaning, because he only is focusing on the word she'ira. Okay. But he doesn't interpret it like the Tanakama. He doesn't interpret it as food. Okay, so as much as Rava has started off with the opening statement of food is a Torah obligation the husband has to feed and support his wife, so meanwhile, in the braces that we learned together, not everyone's on board with that. Okay, anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Afilu Ani Shebi Yisrael V'chule. Okay, so we are now on Mem Ches Amud Aleph. We're about five lines from the top of the Amud, and we are now going back to the Mishnah and the husband's obligation to bury his wife. And what does he have to do? He has to do the normal expenses, meaning whatever is considered normal burial, acceptable burial. So that's what the husband's got to lay out in the event that his wife predeceases him, and now he is contractually obligated. That's called the ksuva. He's contractually obligated to bury her. So as far as when he goes to the funeral home and he makes the arrangements, so he's got to pay what is normally understood to be a basic funeral. So afilu ani shebi yisrael v'chulei. Okay, and if you remember the Mishnah says is that it can't be less than two chalilim and a mekonenes. Okay, so back in the day, so they played instruments at the funeral, which I know sounds a little bit strange, but that was the minhag back in the day. And also, you hired a mekonenes, women who were wailing at the funeral. Okay, I know to us it's strange because it's not our societal norm, but back in the day that was normal. Okay, and it's not that different. Right, and it's not that different than nowadays. What you hire is someone to give a hesped. Well, I mean, in other words, most of the time nowadays, so you have a rav and he'll give the hesped. But in other words, but if you don't have a rav, you'll hire a rabbi to give a hesped. It's not much different than that. But anyway, so mechlav the tanakam b'savar hanilo. Now, Rabbi Huda is making a point which seemingly is arguing with the Tanakama, meaning the Tanakama is of the position. What is the position of the Tanakama? Meaning, is he arguing with that? So, hey, Chidami, the Gemara says, well, what's the context over here? Meaning, let's try to envision on what would be the case where the Tanakhama is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda. So, hey, Chidami, Ida Orcha, my time is the Tanakhama Damar Lo. Meaning, if this is something that she's used to. Now, when I say something that she's used to, right? The total number of times that she's going to be buried is, I believe, it's going to be one. So orcha here in this context. Okay, I just entertained myself. So orcha in this context means that it's her family minhag. In other words, that when she's used to it, meaning that when she attends her family funerals, so these are the things that she's normally accustomed to, right? In other words, basically the discussion we are about to have is something that happens, Baruch Hashem, in every single marriage, and that is that every time two people get together, she's accustomed to a certain lifestyle, and he's accustomed to a certain lifestyle. And now, what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to figure out what's the lifestyle that they are going to be accustomed to. So anyway, so over here, the Gemara wants to know, where is the Tanakama and Rabbi Huda arguing? So either or chamaitam the Tanakama damar lo. So if in her family, it is normal, right? Two flute players, a mekonenes. If this is normal, so then I can't imagine that the Tanakama would say that no. In other words, because what he has to do is that he has to provide for her standard of living, for her normal, for her custom lifestyle. And if this was not her standard of living, so then why would Rav Yehuda say, oh, you gotta pay not for the basic funeral, but you gotta pay for the upgrades. And what do you mean? If that's not her minug, she wasn't raised on this kind of lifestyle, so then what? You have to go above it? So Gemara says, look, Tzricha Gagon D'Arche D'Day V'Lavarcha D'Da. So the Gemara says like this. In other words, what happened was that she came not from wealth, and he came from wealth. And now I know I'm making all this nice and simple, and it's not that simple, but it's just a good way to present the Gemara. It's a good way to think about it. Okay, so in other words, so he's coming for money, she's not coming for money. Now, when they get married, so now what happens? So this, I'm giving the halacha over here, meaning, right, this is not the counseling over here, this is just basic halacha. And that is that halachically, he is now required to support her and treat her as per his style, as per his lifestyle. So, the Gemara goes on to explain. Now the Tanakama is of the position of Ola Imo Ve'eno Yoredes Imo, that she's going to get an upgrade. meaning everybody agrees to that, that while they're married, while they're husband and wife, she absolutely is going to be getting an upgrade. But what the Tanakhama will tell you, Tani Mila Mechaim of Alacha Misalo, that's true, and that's it's irrefutable. However, that's only while she's alive. So in other words, while she's alive, so the lifestyle that she's going to enjoy is going to be his lifestyle, and for her, that's going to be an upgrade, and good, and mazel tov. However, what the Tanakhama is going to argue is, okay, but once she dies, so at that point in time, yes, he has to bury her, but not as per his lifestyle. In other words, now, she's no longer alive. So yes, he's required to bury her, but in terms of the basic versus upgrades, in terms of the burial, so no longer is she going to have to subscribe to his lifestyle, and therefore he can go basic regarding the burial. And Rabbi Yehuda Savra Afila Chamisa. And what Rabbi Yehuda is going to argue is that no, is that Ola Imo is not only while she's alive, but even after she dies. In other words, the burial is also going to have to be based on what is normal for him and his family. And if he would have buried any one of his own family with the upgrades, so he's going to be burying his wife with the upgrades as well. And Ola Imo is not only Mechaim, but even Lachamisa as well. And Amr Chis, Amr Maruk, Halacha Karev Yehuda. And the Gemara says, and that's in fact the Halacha. Okay, so really interesting. In other words, and we'll come back and we'll discuss this in more detail later in the Masechta. But Ola Imo, in other words, this idea that when they get married, so, and he is used to a certain lifestyle, which is a higher level than hers, so she now is going to be able to enjoy that kind of lifestyle. And again, that's an obligation now on his part. That's Ola Imo. And then the only point of debate that we have over here is that continue even after she dies, and what kind of burial does he have to give her? Amar v'chis, Amar maruk v'misha nishtateh. Okay, so we move on in the Gemara, right? New topic of discussion, unfortunate topic of discussion, and that is what happens if the husband right now currently becomes unavailable for various reasons, and it means now that we're going to have to appoint an executor over his estate in order to support his wife. And what kind of support is she going to be receiving from the executor? So, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Marukva, Misha Nishtateh. So the first example that's given over here, unbelievably unfortunate, is that unfortunately he lost his mind. Okay, so he no longer is sane. He becomes insane, clinically insane. And so now based in Yordan Lenechasav, Vizanim, Afarnas, and Nesisho, Vanov, Vanosav, Vidavar Acher. So, and that means now that Basin's going to appoint an executor over his estate in order to support his wife and his children, and also Davar Acher. Okay, that's a nondescript term. The Gemara, in just a couple of moments from now, is going to give description of what that is. Amale Ravina Ravashi Maishna Mehad Tanya. So Ravina says to Ravashi, I don't understand. I have a comparable Brisa. I think it's comparable. It's a comparable Brisa, and this Brisa does not give these exact instructions. The instructions of the Brisa are different. Well, how does the Brisa read? Misha Lach L'midin Siyam V'Yishto Tavas Mezonos Based in Yoridin L'chasa V'zon Mefarnas and Yishto Aval Lo Banav Uvenosav V'lo Davar Acher. So here now in this Comp Brisa, so it says that if he goes away and he doesn't give any instructions of what to do with his wife, with his kids, so what now Basin will do is that she has to eat. So Basin will appoint an executor over the estate in order so that from the estate, the executor will allocate to the wife, but only to the wife and not to the children. Okay. And what the children, unfortunately, are going to have to do now is that they're going to have to go begging. Okay. So all this sounds terrible, but right now we are stuck between the two, meaning we started off with a statement by Rav Chista in the name of Mar Ukva that if he loses his mind, so the executor now goes and allocates to the wife and to the children. And meanwhile, when he goes away, so the executor will now allocate to the wife, but not to the children. And it's different, right? Or at least right now, the Gemara thinks it's not different, and therefore it's a problem. So Amrleis, the Ravashi says no. Lo shani lach min yotze ladas liyotze shelo ladas. And so the Gemara says, obviously the cases are different, and let's see if we can articulate the differences between the two cases. Okay, so in the case where Nishtata, where he loses his mind, so, in other words, that wasn't planned. That came about. It's illness. It's mental illness. But that's something that came about non-planned. And so, therefore, what we have to assume is the following, and that is, what would he have wanted to do? So, would he have wanted to support his wife and his children? We're going to assume that most people would want to support their wife and their children as well. And so, therefore, that's why the executor is going to come in and allocate to the wife and the children, because that's what we assume that's what he would have wanted. However, for the guy who exits the country, he didn't give any planning. He didn't give any instructions of what to do regarding his wife and regarding his children. So that was a planned exit. Okay. And whatever the circumstances were, but he left without planning. And so over here, did he want to support his wife and support his children? If he did, he would have given instruction to do so. In other words, but he exited. So now under those circumstances, so what do we assume? We assume that he wasn't a benevolent personality. Okay. As such, so what are we going to do? Well, as far as his wife is concerned, he's obligated to support his wife. So regardless of his general personality, his benevolent, or in this case, lack of benevolent personality, so, but we still, an obligation is an obligation. So that's why the executor now is going to go ahead and distribute from his estate over to his wife. But as far as his children are concerned, he is not obligated to support his children. Now, I know this is a touchy subject. It's not touchy. In other words, it's the halacha that we've gone over a couple of times already. But it doesn't, in other words, it's going to sound a little bit harsh. So a man is obligated to support his children up until 6 years of age, at which point in time he's no longer obligated. There is a Takana Susha, which we haven't learned yet in the Gemara. It's coming up later on. Takana Susha is going to tell us that the Chachamim instituted that a father is going to support his children up until Bar Bas Mitzvah. And after that point in time, then there's absolutely no obligation. I'm a little bit unclear over here at what point, what age children are we talking about? If it's children below the age of 6, so then he's absolutely obligated. And so then that's not what we're talking about. So it must be that, and not must be, but I'm assuming it's between 6 and 12. But if it's between 6 and 12, so then you have Takana Susha, which also is an institution. Unless you want to suggest maybe that the Braisa was before Takana Susha. Maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, but the point is that there is no absolute obligation, and he fled the country and he didn't give instruction to do so. So then what the estate cannot do is that you can't take from the estate in order to feed the children. You can't feed the wife because that's an absolute obligation. Continuing in the Gemara, my davar acher. Okay, so what do we say? That if a person loses his mind, so the executor comes in and the executor takes from the estate to support the wife, the children, and davar acher. Now that was nondescript, and obviously the Gemara is going to come back to that. The Gemara comes back to that right now. My davar acher, Rav Chista amar zutachshit. So Rav Chista says not only food, but even cosmetics as well. And Rav Yosef amar tzedakah. And Rav Yosef says tzedakah. So that means to say the as follows. Okay, we in South Florida live in a homeowners association, so we know what the word assessment means. Okay, not enjoyable, but in other words, if they decide that there's a special assessment that's necessary, so then good. So you gotta pay it. Okay, good. So back in the good old days when tzedakah was collected from everybody, in other words, there was a communal fund and tzedakah was collected from everybody, and it wasn't just like, yes, I'd love to give. In other words, back in the day, tzedakah was an obligation that you had to give. And so there were occasions where they had assessments. Well, that's an obligation. 100%. But back in the day, it was organized in community, and every member of the community gave. And it wasn't a question of...
It was collected properly.
Yeah, correct. It was collected. So over here now, so the question now becomes that this davar acher, maybe it's a reference to tzedakah, meaning that there was a special assessment that was made, and so now it's being collected from everybody. So now the question becomes, can the executor come and now take from the estate in order to give to this collection? So now, manda amar tachshi kol shekein tzedakah. Manda amar tzedakah, aval tachshi yavin ala, manda amar tachshi kol shekein tzedakah. Now, if you're of the position of tachshit, so in other words, if you're taking from the estate in order to pay for cosmetics, so then, if you're of the position that you do not take for tachshit, then for sure you're not taking for tzedakah. Meaning tachshit is for the wife, and he is obligated to support his wife, but again, support meaning in the course of food. But if tachshit is going to be withheld, so for sure tzedakah is going to be withheld as well. But man da amr tzedakah aval tachshit yavin ala delo nichale detinavel. But if you're of the position that davar acher is a reference to tzedakah, so here what we'll say is that you don't have to give tzedakah, but you still do have to give tachshit. Because what we assume he would want, and again, he's no longer of sane mind, so we don't know, but what we're going to assume that he wants is that hopefully, Baruch Hashem, he will recover and he will have a refuah shlema. And what he would want is he would still want his wife to be kept together, put together.
Okay. No.
Again, that's why I was trying to explain. In other words, back in the day, there was assessments made on the community, and the community paid it. And every member of the community paid it. Okay. Amar Rav Chiya Barav and Amar Rav Huna Mishalach Medina Siyam Umesa Ishto. Based in Jordan Lechasev Ekover Noso Lefi Kvodo. Okay, so we're just one more quick topic to cover before we get to the next Mishnah, and that would be that he went away and she died. And so what Beis Din now does, again, he has a obligation. This is an absolute obligation. It's Tanai Beis Din. It's a contractual obligation that he had when he married her, and then he said he must bury her. And so therefore, Beis Din will now go into his estate, take from his estate, in order to pay for a funeral. And V'kovrin osa l'fi kvodo. So, and based on what he's used to, whatever upgrades his family was used to, l'fi kvodo v'lefi kvodo. So and the Gemara immediately jumps on that. What do you mean? Let's say he married a woman where her upgrades were better. In other words, she comes from a family where her upgrades are better. So, ema af lefi kvodo. So, the Gemara says, okay. So, we're not saying his upgrades versus her upgrades, meaning whichever one is higher. Meaning, if she had upgrades in her family that were even higher than his, so they have to pay for her upgrades. And if his upgrades exceeded her upgrades, so then you got to pay based on his upgrades, whichever cost is higher. So, and hakamash malan olimo veino yoredes imo vafil achamisa. And then this goes back to what we discussed earlier this morning, and that is that when a woman marries a man, so what's going to happen now is that if he lived high on a higher level, so she elevates to that level, and if she was on a higher level, she doesn't downgrade. So ola imo veino yoredes imo. Okay, so this is right. This is the basic structure in terms of husband and wife, where he's got to either match what she's used to, or if he normally exceeds what she's used to, he brings her up to his level. And that's not only true while they're alive; it's also true after they die as well. Now we debated that issue earlier, but obviously over here, Rav Chiya is taking the position that it's even lachar misa. Amr of Masa Omer im Mesa lo sik brum nechasav shomim lo. Okay, if a person says while he's dying that if and when my wife dies, so don't use my assets to bury her, shomim lo. So we listen to him. So the Gemara says Maishna ki Amar denafli nechsei kami yasme ki lo Amar nami nechsei kami yasme ramu. So the Gemara says I don't understand. In the event where he predeceases her, so that's it. In other words, his estate is not obligated to bury her. Okay, in other words, let me try to be clear about this. Okay, in the event that she predeceases him, he has to bury her. And he has to pay for all the finances of burial. And whatever upgrade she's used to, he has to pay for that as well, as we just learned together. And that's a ksuva contractual obligation. But now let's talk about what happens when he predeceases her. So now at that point in time, so what happens? So what happens is what's called she collects her tshuva, meaning now this is the most basic definition of a tshuva, and that there's a lump sum of money that's written into the tshuva that in the event that he divorces her or he dies, she collects a lump sum amount. Now, after that point in time, the financial relationship between him and her are over. Well, he's no longer alive, but in other words, but that's it. In other words, at that point in time, once the ksuva payment is paid, so that's it. There is no longer a financial relationship between a state and her. And as far as her burial is concerned, so he's no longer obligated to pay for the burial, or let's say better, his estate is no longer obligated to pay for the burial because she collected the ksuva amount. So what the Gemara says is that I don't understand. As he's dying and he's predeceasing her and his instructions are, my estate doesn't pay for the funeral, well, what do you mean? Even if he doesn't give instruction, what's going to happen is that she'll collect her ksuva and then the estate no longer is obligated, even without his instructions. So Ella, so the Gemara says, okay, great point. So what we're going to do is that we're going to restate Rav Masna, tweak it a little bit. Ha'or me'imeis hu, lo sik beru minechasav, so ain't shamam lo, What Rav Masna meant was a totally different point, and that is, a person dies, and here's its instructions, here's its sava, right? You kids, you're not going to bury me. Well, who's going to bury me? The community all bury me, but you are not going to bury me. So Rav Masna says, so good. So you know what we do? We ignore his instructions, meaning that you can't do that. What you can't do is that, assuming that the estate has money and to bury the father, so then the estate is going to bury the father. In other words, what the kids cannot do is they can't keep the money and then expect the community to go ahead and to bury the father. That is perfectly inappropriate. Probably also. Okay, but in other words, let's just simply say you cannot do that. Okay, good. It takes us now to the Mishnah. We're on Memchas Amud Aleph. We're now continuing in the Mishnah. And now we're going to try to give definition to the second stage of marriage. Okay. You've heard me say this before, but let's say it again as a brief introduction. First stage of marriage, super clear in terms of how that's effected, right? The first Mishnah in Kedushin, Kesef, Shtar, Bia, and that's it. And now we've entered into into what's called marriage. That's Erusin, first stage of marriage. Okay, and then you transition from the first stage of marriage to the second stage of marriage. How is that done? In the Gemara, we're never given full clarity in terms of how that's done. Now, when I ask the question, how is it done? Right, everyone's looking at me. What do you mean, how is it done? It's called a wedding. Okay, great. Mazel tov. And there's Sheva Brachos. Perfect. So good. So how is it done? In the Gemara itself, it's never clearly defined or articulated. Okay? The Gemara is going to use the term of chuppah. What does that mean? In other words, you're under the canopy together. That's the magic? Meaning, what exactly affects the second stage of marriage? Good. So in the Gemara itself, we're never given absolute clarity. And the Rishonim try to give voice to what exactly is that point. It could either be the chuppah, the bedekin, the yichud room, right? Him taking her into his house. Okay, so what you're hearing amongst the Rishonim is various ways of trying to articulate what exactly is the point. When does the legal point come about? Okay, interesting. Okay, and we made this point before. This is not the first time we're covering this territory. So anyway, so over here now in our Mishnah, so what we're going to look together at is a Mishnah that describes, it's not the most romantic, but another means, another ways of affecting the second stage of marriage, and that is she's being passed off. In other words, when she moves from her father's house to now her husband's house, so at that point in time, we're at the second stage of marriage, and it's done by shlichim. Okay, again, it's not super romantic, but it doesn't matter. We're not learning romance right now. We're learning halacha, and we're learning at what point exactly we are going to be affecting that second stage of marriage when it's done through agency, when it's done through shliach. So, l'mishnah, la'olam hi b'rishos ha'av ad shitikanes l'rishos ha'bal l'nisuin. So, she's going to be in her father's domain until she goes into her husband's domain. Okay, that's vague, right? Stay tuned. We're going to try to explain that better. Masara av l'shluche ha'ba'al harei b'rishos ha'bal. So let's say the father gives her off to the Shluchei HaBaal. In other words, what the husband does is that instead of picking up his new wife, he sends out Shlichim, or a Shliach, to pick up his new wife. So once the transfer is made over, Sarei B'Shus HaBaal. So she now becomes under the domain of her husband. Okay, and now we are at the point of Nisuin, and now all the financial obligations will kick in. Now, I say that knowing that the Gemara is not going to be as forceful or as definitive as I just said it. So, I'm putting caution out there. So, halacha avim shluchei ha'bal, osha achu shluchei ha'avim shluchei ha'bal, harei b'rishos ha'av. However, let's say the handing her over to the shliach was not absolute, i.e., the father says, wait one second, I'm coming with you. Or, the shliach of the father says, we are coming with you. So at that point in time, this is not a full Masira, and therefore she's still under the domain of the father. So, Masru Shluchav L'Shluchei HaBaal Harei B'Rishos HaBaal. If the Shluchei HaBaal give her over to the Shluchei HaBaal. So over here, neither of the principles are there. Okay, we are the furthest away from romance that one could possibly be. Okay, so what's happening now is that she is being sent by the shliach of the father. She is being received by the shliach of the husband. But it doesn't matter. In other words, shlucha shel adam kamoso. So everyone's being represented by a proxy. And so now what happens is that as she moves from one shliach to the next shliach, so that's it now. That's a full transfer. And now, mazel tov, you're married. Second stage of marriage, nusuin. Okay, so there's a lot to unpackage over here in our Mishnah. Let's start off the discussion. Obviously, we'll continue tomorrow. But my la'olam. So the Gemara says, okay, the opening word of the Mishnah, la'olam hi b'rishus ha'av ashitikanes l'rishus ha'bal. That's a strong language. The Mishnah is obviously trying to communicate something. What's the Mishnah coming to communicate? La'afuke mi Mishnah rishon adinan higezman v'lo niso ochlos mishlo ochlos b'truma so kamash malan la'olam. Okay, it's coming to exclude ourselves from Mishnah Rishona. Now, you remember Mishnah Rishona because we quoted it on day one of our Masechta, and that's a long time ago, right? We're on Daf Memches, 48 days ago, approximately. So that's a long time ago. But you remember, the minhag back in the good old days is that Kedushin, and then a year later, Nisuin. And it's to the date. In other words, so whatever day the Kedushin was, a full year later, to the date you have to get married. And at that point in time, if you don't get married, financial obligations kick in at that point in time. And then we spoke about the very beginning of the Masechta. What if it's an anus? What if it's anus by him and anusa by her? Okay, what if they didn't get married because the rabbi said that you're not allowed to get married until Wednesday? Okay, that was the first discussion we had in the Masechta. Anyway, but the point is that a year later comes and he doesn't marry her. So Mishnah Rishona says that she is now able to be financially supported, and even, we'll go even a step further. And then let's say she marries a Kohen, she can even eat truma. Now we know that a woman can eat truma at the point of erisin, but midrabanan, that is held in abeyance until nisuin. And only at the point of nisuin can an Ashes Kohen eat truma. Ah, but over here now the years come and gone. And now, for whatever reason, he didn't marry her. So according to Mishnah Rishona, so that's an older viewpoint. According to Mishnah Rishona, she's allowed to eat truma. Our Mishnah is against that. Our Mishnah is of the position that no, she cannot eat truma until actual marriage. In other words, even though the year came and went, she can only eat truma at the point of actual marriage. Huh? It's more like a gzera. It's a gzera that she's not allowed to eat truma. We'll actually go over that a little bit better right now. Masar of l'shulchei abal harei b'rishos abal. So let's say the father comes. I'm sorry, no, not yet. We're not at that point of the mission yet. So the father hands her off to the shluch abal. So now she's brishos abal. Amarav misirasa lakol chutz mitruma. Okay, now we're in a strange territory in terms of nisuin, because nisuin usually is affected by chuppah. Again, whatever that means in more specific terms. But what normally happens is that they're together, marriage, ceremony, under the chuppah, yichud room, whatever it is, it's normally done by them being together. This is unusual, meaning he sent a shlich to collect her. Okay? So again, put romance aside. So it's an unusual way to effect the second stage of marriage. And so what the Amoraim are going to be deliberating is this like Nisuin 100% and will affect her and both entitle her and obligate her 100% by Nisuin? That's going to be the discussion. So Rav says almost 100%. One notable exception, and that is she won't be able to eat truma. And Rav Asi Amar afla truma. And Rav Asi says no. 100% means 100%. And even for truma. Now,
Well,
the truth of the matter is she's an Eishes Ish already by Erison. She's an Eishes Ish.
So how could she have Yichud with a Shliach?
So let's say it's a couple of Shlichim that picked her up. Does that make it better? Okay, could be. It's a really good question. Maybe they were in a public area, and you know they picked her up in a public area. Okay. So this transfer over to the Shliach. So is it Lakol? So Rav says almost, but not Truma. And Rav Asi says, no, even for Truma. Now, what are they debating over here? The deliberation over here is really going to be based on why can an Arusa not eat Truma? There are two reasons that that are always brought down in the Gemara. The Gemara here and happens not to discuss it, but the assumption is, and Rashi says it over here. The assumption is that according to Rav, the reason why an Arusa can't eat Truma is the following. Because what happens when a Kohen marries a woman, and again, Erusin, which at that point in time, Minatar, she's allowed to eat Truma, but the Chachamim stepped in and said no. So according to Rav, why did the Chachamim say no? Because what's going to end up happening, what could happen, sorry, is that they'll get married, and it'll turn out that there were Mumim. She had physical blemishes that he did not know about, and she didn't disclose. And the kinds of physical blemishes which basically are going to undo the entire marriage. In other words, that's something that you should have disclosed. You didn't disclose it. It's a mekach tos. And so therefore, all the truma that she ate up until that point in time was done illicitly, was totally done inappropriately. So therefore, Rav says, because and the Gemara describes it as simpon. And so as a result of that, she's not allowed to eat truma during erusin. And the other explanation of why a Rusa is not allowed to eat truma is because what she may end up doing is she may end up taking the truma, bringing it back to her house, and feeding it to her family. Now she's an Eishes Kohen, she's allowed to eat it, but her family is not allowed to, and so therefore maybe she'll give it over to her family. That's another concern. So over here this will be now a nafkamina, meaning let's say she was handed over to the shliach of the Baal. So according to Rav, the husband hasn't seen her yet. He hasn't been with her yet. So therefore, the concern of simpon still exists. But according to Rav Asi, so what's the concern now? She's going to bring the truma back to her family? She left her family. Her family have now handed her over. Okay, good. That's an Afghan meaning. Let's just do a little bit more for this morning. Eisvei Ravuna Rav Asi Vamri Vamri Lachia Barav LaRav Asi LaOlam Hebrew Shosav Ad Shitikanes LaChupa. So over here, we have the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, La Olam. So Arma Lahu, Rav. So Rav says, either he's saying it to Ravuna or to his son Chia. Lava Mina Lahu, Lo Tizla Basa Ipcha. Yachol Lashur Lahu, Misira So, Zu Knisasa Lachupa. The Mishnah doesn't bother me. Meaning the Mishnah could just simply understand that Misira is equivalent to Chupa. Just like Chupa, she's allowed to eat Truma. Misira also means that she's allowed to eat Truma. Okay, so we're going to pause over here at this point in time. So basically now, in our Mishnah, a discussion of, she's been handed over to the shliach of the Baal, she now becomes under the domain of the Baal, she is now married, not just stage one, but stage two of marriage, of Nisuin, and is that for every intent and purpose, and is that for every halacha? So the Amoraim are debating this very issue, i.e., she's now an Eishes Kohen, is she allowed to eat Truma? According to Rav, the answer is no. According to Rav Asi, the answer would be yes. And what is the machlokus? We went through the machlokus. And as far as Rav is concerned, Rav was of the position that she can eat truma. And as far as the Mishnah is concerned, he can interpret the Mishnah to that position. Okay, good. Let's quickly recap. Memches. So today we went over some of the most basic obligations that a husband has to the wife. The pasuk sheirak susav onasa lo yigara. What are those three things? We started off our morning with going over what are the possible definitions of those three items. Obviously, the Torah is requiring the husband to provide for his wife these items, so obviously it's important to know what they are. The Tanaim debate and deliberate exactly what these items are. When all said and done, by the way, we know what the husband's obligations are. It just really becomes a question of what is Min HaTorah and what's Min HaRabbanan. But in other words, but one of the discussions that started off our daf today is, what is Min HaTorah? What are the obligations? Min HaTorah, that's where we started off today. Then, after that, we learned about lifestyle and what she's accustomed to and what he's accustomed to. And basically the rule of today, and we're going to see this a number of times throughout our Masechta, is that Ola Imo, she goes up to him, whatever his lifestyle is, if it's an upgrade for her, she moves up to, she steps up to that lifestyle. Eino Yoredis Imo, and she doesn't go down. Meaning that if he marries a woman who is used to a particular lifestyle, he's got to support that lifestyle, even though he himself was not. What is open for a discussion, which we saw today, was is that even La Chamisa? In other words, now the burial. He's burying her. He's obligated to bury her. So does he have to pay for a lifestyle that she was used to now that she's dead and it's now just a burial? So does he have to continue with that? That's open for a debate, but the Gemara's conclusion seems to be he does have to pay for that. For the level that she was used to while she was alive. Good. That's basically Amud Aleph in a nutshell. One other big discussion that occurred in Amud Aleph, and that's going to be what happens when he's out to lunch, either mentally or physically. And now an executor is going to be appointed over his estate to go and provide now for his wife. That's a non-starter, meaning that's going to happen. And now the question is he also going to support, is the executor also going to pay for the children as well? It depends. If he lost his mind, if he became insane, so they will, because we assume that he would have wanted that. If he left town, so then the executor does not support the children, because we assume that he didn't want to, because on his own volition, he left without giving instruction, so we assume that he didn't want to, and unfortunately, right, they're gonna have to suffer as a result of that. Okay. And finally, the last thing that we discussed today is what happens when the chuppah is done in an unconventional fashion, in which she's being handed over to his shliach, and as such, now good. So now she has entered his house, but by proxy, legally through shlichus. So now chuppah has been effected. Wonderful. For every area of halacha, that's what we debate in the second half of today's daf.